Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short.
Patriots Playbook.
Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Hi, kids. What are we talking about today? Woo, there's just nothing going on, is there? Don't you just love it when there's nothing? I mean, nothing going on. Oh, yeah, there's a ton of stuff going on. I think we all realize that there have been better days to be Patriot fans. There have been better days to be a football fan. If you're a fan of the National Football League, okay, I get it. It's kind of a difficult day. We're going to recap as much as we can. Yes,
sucky.
It is a sucky day, definitely. But we're going to recap not only what happened on Sunday night, and certainly get you to Nitpick Tuesday, which this normally is here inside Patriots Playbook. But because of the overwhelming story that is the National Football League today as well, with the news concerning the replacement officials, the absolute gaffe, and that's probably a mild word, but the gaffe that was committed last night by a gentleman by the name of Lance Easley in the Green Bay-Seattle Monday night football game. And I don't mean to do that really to pick on him. I mean to do that because facts are facts. These are replacement guys. I'm going to get into this in just a moment with you. But in the meantime, what I want you to do is feel free to share your thoughts, because this is what we do here in the Patriots Playbook. We share our thoughts. We share our opinions. There is no right or wrong answer. Some answers may be closer to right than others, but nothing's silly. Nothing's dumb. All is fair game. So what I want you to do is, first of all, get together your thoughts on nitpicks. What are we nitpicking on as to the result from Sunday night and the 31-30 loss to Baltimore? I know it shouldn't have been a loss. And as I just told Fred, you're basically two plays away from being a 3-0 team instead of a 1-2 team. But you're not. You're still 1-2. That is the fact. I get that. And we'll kind of decipher why that is and whether or not the problems are correctable. That's number one. Number two, clearly, there has been a major, major groundswell of opinion against the NFL and against the replacement officials. I will read to you, if you have not heard it or read it yet today, what the statement is from the National Football League on last night's gaffe, as I put it, in the Monday night football game. I will also tell you that I've got a column up on golocalprov.com. That's P-R-O-V, golocalprov.com. That's the digital news service that I do, that I cover the NFL for and do an occasional column for, usually on the weekends, that I'll paraphrase for you shortly, but I've kind of given you my thoughts on the entire replacement reffing business going on, and put that up this morning, I kind of understand why everybody would feel that way and think that way today. But I'll give you some thoughts there. And I really want your thoughts as to how you fix the problem and what the bigger problem really is at this stage of the NFL season. Does the NFL have egg on its collective face worldwide, as Andy says it does? I don't know if I'm quite ready to go that far. Maybe sometimes I think guys who cover the NFL, as our PFW brethren do here, sometimes you're so close to the forest you can't see the trees. I still think this is the best sport on the globe, on the planet. I'm sure our UK Pats fans and our Australian Pats fans, European Pats fans, I'm sure you would agree. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening mostly to this program. But at the same time, something needs to be corrected, and there needs to be some leadership from the very, very top of the food chain. And I don't think we're getting that right now, all in the interest of proving yourself right as opposed to what is right. And I think those are two different things. All right, so here's how you reach us on the program. If you don't know, it's webradio@patriots.com. That's the email address, webradio at patriots.com. Get us on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Pick up the phone and call. You got a thought. You got something. You got to get off your chest. Do it now. 508-298-0398. Again, that's area code 508, and the number is 298-0398. You can hit me up on Facebook. If you're not a Facebook friend, you can find me, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. Submit the friend request, and then we can post, we can share chats, we can do live things, whatever you like. We can do it on the air, off the air. It's all right there. I'll take the friend request if you're a Pats fan. If you're an NFL fan, bring it on, John.Rook. And, of course, Twitter. Follow me on Twitter if you're not, and thank you so much for all of those of you who have joined me on Twitter over the last couple of weeks since the regular season got started. At J.Rook. 0722 is the Twitter address, at J-R-O-O-K-E 0722. That's how you find us on Twitter. And we will exchange tweets through the broadcast as well. Now, let me get to a couple of issues. Number one, two seconds here, because I want to make sure that our email is up and running. All right, it is up and running. Thank you very much. All right, here we go. All right, now. And we got several from the last program as well that they didn't get to that we'll try to get to as many of those as we possibly can. But I will tell you this, if you are listening now and you submitted an email to PFW, they didn't get to it, resubmit it, because that way I know that you're still listening and I want to take care of you first. Okay? So webradio@patriots.com is best way to go about and do that. Now, a couple of things. The NFL concerning last night, and the, egregious call that was made by Lance Easley, who, by the way, is a junior college football and basketball official. That's what this guy does, if you didn't know that. The interception in the end zone that wasn't an interception, that certainly looked like an interception, that ended up being ruled a catch, and Seattle winning the game at home, causing Green Bay to lose, probably costing hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars of money to change hands worldwide. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal mistake to be made. I'm going to read just a clip, if you will begrudge me for a moment, from the column that I wrote on GoLocalProv.com. And you can join me there if you'd like here in a couple of moments. But here's the thing. Overall, it's just not a good day, as I put it, to be a zebra. Now, for those of us who have spent a few years as officials, and I have, I spent more than 20 years as a partially paid and mostly volunteer umpire in baseball. I've also refereed high school basketball games. But whether it was volunteering for the local Little League or Pop Warner or CYO, as I put it, today was a very tough day, if you've done that, because refs are being looked at with such scorn and degradation that you're being considered a second-class citizen. And this is all because a guy who got his chance to live out a dream messed up a call in a football game last night in Seattle. Now, was it a bad call? I think it probably was. But I'll tell you that he blew the call, and you've got several things that you've got to realize that are in place here. First of all, forget the fact that, to me, the NFL is the entity at the blame here. I realize that there are many of you who would side with the league in their bargaining stance with the, and for lack of a better phrase, I'm going to call them real refs, but because I think the guys that are actually trying to do the job, the replacement refs, they're also real refs. They just don't ref at the level that the NFL officials have trained to officiate. There's a big difference here, and I think you probably realize that. There's roughly, and I saw Peter King quote this number, roughly about $3.3 million apart between the NFL and the real officials, if you will, real refs, in their negotiating standards. And what I think a lot of fans have a problem with is that a part of the negotiation between the two sides is that the real refs are looking for a pension deal, and this is a part-time job. I'm not sure that that is still on the table. I'd have to look at the particulars, and I really haven't had enough time to really research what the issues are. I would tell you that I was under the impression that the sticking point here was the fact that the real refs want a bonus, a signing bonus, a bonus to be paid them upon ratifying the deal because they feel like they are making numerous concessions to the league. And because of that, they want a little something-something back. I'm like, okay, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, we'll give you this. Can you give us a little bonus on top of it, a signing bonus, if you will? The NFL doesn't want to give them that signing bonus because they feel like, in effect, what that's going to be, what that will turn out to be is retro pay for work missed. And the league doesn't want to pay it. All right. That's my understanding of the major sticking point right now between the real refs and the NFL. That may change. I know that the issue of a pension has come up, and yeah, it sounds ridiculous to say, well, it's a part-time job. How do you deserve a pension? Because in real life, you wouldn't get that. All right, people, I'm going to say this once, and I want you to listen very carefully. The National Football League is not real life. It's not. So when we try to bring our professional sports teams down to our level to make it relatable or whatever we do, it doesn't work. It doesn't work because it's not real life. The NFL is the NFL because we've made it that way. We've turned it into the juggernaut that it is because we follow it. We live, eat, breathe, sleep, talk, crap. We do everything about the NFL. It's our fault that the NFL is up on the pedestal that it is. So to use the argument that, well, they would never do that in real life. We'd never get a pension for a part-time job in real life. It's not the real life. So throw that argument out the window. Logic does not dictate that. I certainly agree with the premise, well, in real life, part-timers most likely aren't going to get pensions. Okay. I would certainly say, yeah, I understand that. But these guys are the only professional sport, NFL officials are the only professional sport that are not full-time officials. I think you probably know that. Now, I know that a lot of officials don't want to be full-time because they feel like it would take away from their other income-earning opportunities. They would like to, you know, have certain safeguards in there because it is a violent sport. It is a demanding sport. And I think that's what they're looking for. Now, I'm not taking a pro-official stance, even though I've been an official in my past. But I'm not taking necessarily another stance. I also see the NFL's point of view here. But what I think needs to happen here is some leadership to come forth. And whether that comes from Roger Goodell or not, it's got to come from somewhere up on high. Somebody's got to come off the throne and say, all right, you know what? We jacked around long enough. What's it going to take to get this thing done? There are negotiations in everything in life. There's always give and take. So if the officials want their little signing bonus, give them a signing bonus. Just don't give them as much as they want, but at least they get one. I mean, there's always a way to make this happen, people. It's just that they're stubborn. They're mules. They're jackasses right now. They don't want to move because, well, I want to be right. Or at least I want to be perceived as right. Real leadership is the ability to pull up your sleeves and say, what's it going to take to get it done? And be willing to make a move that might not be popular. You've heard politicians say that. You probably have heard that in all of your local elections. I know you've heard that from the presidential election in this country. You've heard that. It's true. Real leadership means standing up and doing sometimes what isn't the popular thing. So that's really what you have to look at. That's what you have to go by. Now, more to the replacement refs. Okay, real refs, NFL, $3-some-odd million apart of their negotiations. Okay? My point is that some people are criticizing, I think a lot of people are criticizing the replacement refs. Now, that's not right. You're missing the boat entirely if you're criticizing a guy who made a bad call last night. Did he make a bad call? Probably so. But I still don't believe it's fair to criticize him. Anyone who's pulled on a striped shirt does so because they love the sport or they love a kid who plays a sport. And even the regular officials, you know it as well as I do, they routinely make bad calls. It's the nature of the sport they cover. The sport, the NFL, is played and performed at a high speed and a high level of intensity, which is much higher than the officials themselves can humanly perform. And so now we're asking humans, even those that are trained, by the way, we're asking them to make split-second judgments in a sport that they're not properly trained. That's not fair. It's not fair. So there's several people you can blame. You can blame the NFL, you can blame the regular refs, whatever, but don't blame the replacement officials. It's not fair. If you were asked to be a replacement official, you'd go. There's no question in my mind you'd go. I would go. You would go. The chance to call an NFL game, you would go. You're a football fan. You're tuned in here. You would go. Now, we also know that there were, you know, calls that could have gone either way and some bad ones that happened against the Patriots on Sunday night against the Ravens. Some question as to even whether or not Justin Tucker's kick was good. It was good from 27, probably would not have been good from 32, just like, you know, Billy Cundiff's wasn't back in Foxborough in January in the AFC title game. All I'm saying here is don't blame the replacement officials, okay? It's not their fault. It's a thankless job. It's hard enough to do. And we're asking the replacement officials to do something that's already very hard to do. You want to blame somebody, blame the league, or blame the real refs. Whichever side you fall closest with, that's who you should blame here. Let's see some leadership. Let's get this job done, and let's stop having to talk about it. That's what I'm most interested in, gang.
You don't talk to me, all right? Knock it off!
Yeah, that's what we need here. We need some answers. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's open it up with Ken in North Carolina. Ken, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing, John?
Good, Ken.
You know, I agree with everything you just said. First of all, I don't blame the replacement guys. They aren't qualified for this. And let's face it, even the, quote, real refs are not right 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, it has just gotten so embarrassing to watch this. And I watch four games, three on Sunday and Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will watch the Patriots. I've watched them since 1960. And they don't always get broadcast in my area. But I'll tell you, I've canceled my red zone because...
Well, now, isn't that a little like throwing the baby out with the bathwater? Why would you do that?
Well, you know what? I'm tired of the NFL being the king. I'm tired of other people...
But, Ken, it's fans like you that have made the NFL the way it is, okay? We all have. We've all contributed here. So if we're going to blame anybody, let's blame ourselves from turning this into a global phenomenon that it is. I'm just saying I don't think we're placing the blame in the right spot. The blame needs to lie with the people who are directly involved here. That's the league, and that's also the regular refs. That's
regular refs as much. They obviously don't care about the game either.
Okay. I guess I can understand why you would say that.
And you know what? And not only from their standpoint, they block guys from Division I college football from going in.
Yeah, right.
Okay, now those guys would probably be doing a pretty good job. So now we are stuck with guys that are high school teachers that coach high school games, coach low-level college games. Putting them in a situation that they can't possibly make good judgments on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm putting it on both of them. And frankly, I don't care who's right, who's wrong, what the ramifications are, you know, 2 years down the road. But at least somebody has to take the leadership to say,
right,
and perhaps that would be a guy like Robert Kraft. He knows how to get through this.
Well, I think, you know, Ken, you bring up a very good point, and I thank you for calling. I'm going to get to some other calls because we're kind of loaded up on the phones, which you might expect, but thank you, Ken. That's an excellent point, and I think that would be the next case. I think that would be the next logical step, is if Roger Goodell is close to this, and the refs, you know, are trying to, you know, also too close to this, I should say, and the refs aren't able to effectuate a change here. Somebody from ownership within the league, somebody high up in the league, somebody that has leadership and is looked up to, needs to take the bull by the horn and make a few phone calls and say, okay, how do we fix this? And I think that's a great point, Ken. I really do. How about somebody like Robert Kraft? How about somebody like Mr. Kraft, who would step up, pick up the phone, and say, okay, Roger, how do we fix this problem? Or maybe he already knows how to fix the problem, and it's just a matter of negotiating with the regular refs to get this thing done. See, if the league really wanted to get this done, let me tell you how mischievous I really believe the NFL to be here, okay? I believe the NFL is one of those entities that any pub is good pub. That's what I believe. That's my own personal opinion. I don't have any facts to really back that up other than 33 years of covering the league as a professional.
Good Lord, I would call you a media whore, but I feel like that would be offensive to whores.
Thank you for that. But it's true. Any PR is good PR as far as the NFL is concerned. And so as long as we're talking about football, the league is really in no hurry. When the NFL gets hurt in one specific area is when you're going to see them start to do something. That is in the pocketbook. Okay? That's what will take it that's what will make it happen. So unless the owners are affected in the pocketbook, the NFL's not going to move on their behalf. So it would take someone like, I think, a Robert Kraft or a Jerry Jones, someone along of that ilk, to pick up the phone, talk to the fellow owners, and say, all right, let's get a consensus here. How do we get this done? We're taking too huge a negative PR hit. We need to make this happen. We are the elite league. We're the elite sport on the planet. Let's act like it. Let's make something happen. How do we get this thing to go? How can we erase the bad and turn it to good? Because, you know, so much talk, as I'm sure you've been heard, you've heard on your local talk radio, you've seen on ESPN, whatever it is that you're watching and listening to, how the shield has been stained. And the NFL's bottom line is don't stain the shield. They're talking about the logo, the NFL, what it stands for, supposed to stand for excellence. But that shield has been stained. I think we all know that. And the shield is not only stained, it's cracking. Its veneer is cracking. So how do you repair it? You take leadership, you step up to the table, you say, all right, my fellow owners, we got to make this happen because our league is getting a bad rap and it's going to affect us in the pocketbook, and let's take care of it now before our pocketbooks are affected. Good suggestion, Ken. Olivier in Virginia, you're up next in the playbook.
Hi, John. How are you?
Great, Olivier.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
To follow the argument that you made, I think this inelastic concept with the NFL right now is clear. I don't see they are not hurting. People keep on watching. There is no incentive really to fix the problem because it's not even a problem. All those guys are asking is to have a pension as per what had been agreed when they started to get the job. I don't think that they're asking to get pensions for the new guys that may be coming in. So it's kind of a drop in the bucket from a money perspective. I think it's more power from Goodell. He wants ultimate power. He wants to be the Napoleon of the NFL, my way or the highway. And ultimately, it may embarrass the league a little bit. It may piss off the audience and the consumers. But ultimately, you know, what's in it for them besides a reputation to try to fix this? Nothing. Because they make money over fist. You know, someone would have to come up, like maybe Mr. Kraft and other people, to say, let's do something because it's the right thing to do, not because it's a financial thing to do.
I think that's a good. I think that's probably there's some truth to that.
Yeah,
I think there's some truth to that.
Ultimately, you're also right. There is a lot of publicity, wrong publicity or bad publicity right now. But you know what? It feeds the tabloids. You know, people have a job reporting that. that situation with the referees and so forth. But I was also calling for another thing, then I'll drop off.
Sure.
I'm still concerned by the offensive line. You know, I thought the first quarter we played great on both sides of the offense and defense.
Right.
And then it started to degrade. And then all of a sudden we were 9 points up or whatever it was on the fourth quarter, and we could not close the game because Brady, again, was rushed. It looked like he didn't have the right protection. I think he was sacked twice and so forth. So when people say, well, with time, you know, the offensive line is going to gel and blah, 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 I think we're missing talent. And again, you know, when I see that we offered $4 million or whatever it was for Waters to come back, and we know that our best asset is Brady, why not giving the guy $2 million more and have him, you know, produce so we are not in that position? A shareholder of a company, and if my company's objective is to win, what's $2 or $3 million more? Nothing. It's all about ego and arrogance at that point.
It's kind
of
like
on the side of the player as well. But in this case, it's supply and demand. There is no other guy like Brian Walter that's out there.
I agree. It's kind of like insuring a Maserati for the price to insure a Volkswagen. You know,
exactly. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, Brady is getting older. He cannot sustain the same type of violent hit as he was when he started his career. And we are playing with fire for nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, good points, Olivier.
I do share
your sentiment about the offensive line as a whole. I thought it was better. I thought it was better, especially with a defense like Baltimore's. I didn't think our offense was so much the problem on Sunday. Although I will tell you that I do believe that this team had a chance to win it and failed at the end in those last couple of drives.
You know, it's like in soccer. In soccer, when you have opportunities to kick a penalty kick and you miss it, usually you lose the game.
Yeah.
When we have three opportunities, two by McCourty, to catch a ball, at least one of them, he had it in his hand and then he lost concentration and he dropped it. It's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the difference between winning and losing. Because I thought ultimately we played a competitive game in a very tough situation. You know, we came up firing. That's what we wanted to see. But losing that way, and you know, forget about the refs. I mean, these guys, it is what it is at that point. It's going to be ups and downs. But we had the game in our hands.
You're right.
We're winning this game.
You have a 9-point lead with 5 minutes to go. You should win.
Super Bowl all over again.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then the other thing is McDaniels actually, is he trying to force a new philosophy on
something? Yes, he is.
And I don't know why. You know, last year.
Well, because I explained last week, Olivier, he's doing it because this was a fundamental decision that the organization decided to undertake in the offseason once they signed Aaron Hernandez on top of re-signing Rob Gronkowski to long-term deals, both of them. This organization decided they have changed philosophically, and they're trying to figure out the best way to effectuate that change.
Is it working, though?
No, right now, no, it's not.
Do you think it's going to work? Do you think it's the right thing to do? Because I'm not an expert.
Well, look at the first game against Tennessee when everybody's healthy.
Yeah.
Okay. I would
also,
say,
I'd
say that yes, that if you look, I mean, it's only a 1 week sample and we really won't get another sample until Hernandez is healthy enough to be back in there.
Yeah,
but I would say yes for now. What I'm most glad about is I actually saw this offense, you know, have some sort of versatility to the point where they went back to the old Patriot way in order to beat Baltimore this week. And I love the spread and I love the no huddle. And I thought that was the exact way to go. And the problem is they stopped doing that. And that's why they lost the game. They didn't continue to adjust. They're still working on this. Okay, this is where we want to be, but this is who we are. And they're still having a problem trying to fight that, you know, this is who we are versus who we want to be. And they need to be who they are. It's all about winning games. I don't want to see this 2012 version of the Patriots turn out like the 07 or the 09 versions, you know, when you're sending players away and they come up short when we knew, you know, God dog good and well that they were good enough to win the whole thing.
I agree. It makes no sense to me, John. No sense to me that, you know, we did something well and it worked and we proved it on the field and all of a sudden we go back because, you know, we want to be too cute. Makes no sense to me.
That's it in a nutshell. So
right.
I think, and Olivia, you bring up some very good points. Thank you for the phone call. This is going to be a problem. Guys, this is our problem. This is our lot in life. This is what we're going to face over the next few weeks. Now, this team has a chance to get healthy in a hurry because we all know the schedule will certainly play toward that. But it may take some time, and there may be a few more stumbles. The question is, how many stumbles can you afford to take until it starts to really hurt your chance to get into the playoffs. One, two, three, who knows? I mean, I said this team could go 14-2. Looks like they got to rip off 13 in a row for me to have that happen. But I also said that knowing that I also thought they would lose the Baltimore game. All right, and I did pick that this last week. I hate to say that, but I did. I just didn't feel strong enough about it. They should have won the game. I certainly was rooting for them to win it. It didn't happen that way.
The thing that kills is, though, you lose the Arizona game, and it's a game that everybody expected them to win. And so you think in your
mind. Now you need to win a game that you don't expect to win.
So you think in your mind as a fan, I'd say maybe a good majority of the fans thought like us, okay, going into Baltimore, that's one that we can lose.
Right.
And to be up 13-0 at the end of a quarter and then up 9 points in the fourth and have the chance to steal that one back, but not only steal it back, but steal it back against a conference opponent that you're going to be going up, you know, fighting. But, you're going to be fighting for one of those top seeds.
There's no question. And then if it comes down to a shared record, they're going to have the home field advantage
that
now.
That game is like losing two because you lose the head-to-head and you lose one in the conference, too.
You better root against Baltimore every chance you get now.
You better be rooting for Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh and Baltimore play twice. The season.
Yeah, you have to. You have to. You got to root against Baltimore now because now you've just lost a very important tiebreaker, and you lost it by the narrowest of margins.
And the Patriots don't play Pittsburgh this year, so they still have the chance to get the interconference tiebreaker.
That's correct.
So that's why you have to root for them.
That's correct. Here's Chris in Las Vegas. Chris, you're in the playbook.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Great, Chris.
Hey, I just think it's miraculous that we didn't have a bad injury on Sunday. You know, I was thinking the entire time with the way the game was going that, oh, geez, I hope we just got this one without an injury. Wasn't happy that we lost, but I guess the silver lining would be that, we came out of there relatively healthy and strongly feel as though, player safety is a big issue with these replacement refs. You know, I'll use the analogy. You know, I've been in a contact sport that's fairly violent, that moves pretty fast, like football. I do Taekwondo. I've done it my entire life on the international and national stage. And, before Taekwondo was pretty political, before they went to electronic scoring because of the Olympics. And, you could find yourself being very frustrated with some of the phantom calls or kicks or punches that were being landed against you fairly quickly. And your mentality at that point is, hey, look, I got to knock this guy out if I'm going to win.
Right.
And I feel as though, players and coaches are entering the game more frustrated. What are your thoughts on that?
I can certainly understand that. I think we felt that after the first week that players and coaches were starting to get more frustrated. And then we've seen it sort of continue to escalate slightly after last week and certainly after this week and after last night. And the players, in fact, Vince Wilfork even said this after the game on Sunday night. He basically said, we're not sure sometimes what's a rule and what isn't. Because, and so that leads to hesitation. And if there's hesitation, on the field, well, put it this way, I'll use an old adage, he who hesitates is lost. And so these guys don't know which way to go for fear of committing a penalty, where in the past they might have been able to, I use the term get away with, but now they're not getting away with. And so, and this is how I explain it to my baseball teams, that I've coached the years. I say, look, the every umpire strike zone is different. You have to adjust to the strike zone. If the umpire says a strike is a strike, that's what you have to adjust to, even if it wasn't a strike a week ago with a different guy. And so in terms of the NFL, the players now have to learn definitively, okay, these guys are calling this, they're not calling this. This is how we have to play. We have to adjust. And frankly, because there's so many moving parts, I think the biggest issue here is as well, okay, but we're not sure what they're going to call and what they're not going to call. Then it's going to be imperative on the league to speak to the coaches, and it's going to be imperative on the coaches to get direct response from the officials on what is and is not a penalty. That's what Bill Belichick says he was trying to get from the official at the end of the game when he tried to grab one and find out, hey, is that field goal attempt, is that reviewable, which it was not. So
I agree with you. It's like the refs are trying to make up calls.
Yes.
They'll call it one
yes.
time and then not call it the next.
Ultimately, it's going to be up to the athletes and especially the coaches. It's going to be up to them to adjust to the way games are being called if we have to go much further with the replacement official. You got to figure out a way to do it. And we've heard some players already say, you know what? We can't let the game boil down to somebody else's hands. We have to take charge here and not leave the game in the hands of the officials. But now it's starting to get to the point where you got games with 20, 25 penalties like we saw the Patriots and the Ravens go through on Sunday night. It's kind of like, God, that's ridiculous. I mean, there were flags, it adds to the length of the game. I don't think that the officials are even sure what is a penalty and what isn't. This is where the NFL has to take some of these guys that they've really put out on a gangplank here, and they have to say, fellas, okay, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it's a duck. Throw the flag. You know what I'm saying? But if you have any doubt, stick the thing in your pocket and let the players play. It's that simple.
Yeah, and I agree with you. You know, the only other point I was going to make was one you made right when I was getting on the phone with you guys, is that, I agree with you, and that the NFL, they think that any attention is good attention. And they're probably thinking, wow, you know, we've got our own little soap opera going.
Oh, yeah. All the ratings I'm telling going. You. Yeah, Chris, they're loving it. Hey, by the way, you're in Vegas. How much money? How much money did you lose on anything last night?
I had a parlay, and I lost in the Packers.
Wow.
So, you know, I lost $40.
Wow.
On the local news, there was a small little riot that ensued at one of the local casinos here. People throwing their drinks everywhere and fist fights breaking out. And it was a mess.
Seriously? Fist fights breaking out?
Fist fights breaking out. Yeah. People throwing their drinks, where they take the bets.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was a little bit of a nightmare.
Holy crap. Wow. Well, see, now this is where now the NFL's got to see this. This isn't good for business. And if it continues to go downward like this, I don't know how much more that they can really take before, you know, it really does, as I mentioned earlier, Chris, it starts to hit them in the pocketbook. And so this is where leadership has to step up now.
Yeah. And Robert Kraft is a leader. And I hope, you know, he's a guy with integrity. He can get things done. And, you know, I believe that it's going to take someone like him, as you said earlier, to step up and say, hey, look, you know, we need to be leaders and we need to be adults and get this part away, because it's impacting the integrity of the game, which is huge.
And that's what you don't want right now. And now the integrity is starting to crack a little bit. As I said, the luster, the shine has come off the shield. So before it completely cracks and the whole veneer is washed away, how do we fix this? Somebody, somewhere in the NFL... Commissioner, owner, someone's got to step up and say, all right, guys, how do we fix it? Let's fix it.
Well, you know, the only way it's going to, you know, happen to impact the NFL is if the fans also, you know, do something about it. And you know, the fans, you know, I feel strongly that the NFL feels as though we're dumb and we're just going to watch the games no matter what.
Well, we are, though, Chris, but we are. See, that's just it. We are. I don't think the fans... First of all, to say that the fans would boycott or whatever, I think that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard, because you and I both know that will never happen. Let me repeat that.
Oh, no.
Never happen. In fact, if anything, I would argue, in a little bit of a sycophant or sick way here, all right, I would argue that more people might watch because they want to see the next implosion on the field.
Of course they are. I don't like either team, and I watched it. So, besides, you know, having a bet on Green Bay. But, you know, I watched it, and because in the back of my mind, exactly what you said, John, I was thinking, wow, you know, what are we going to be talking about tomorrow? And I was almost disappointed. I was just like, oh, wow, okay, well, there are a few bad calls, but, you know, other than that, nothing seriously controversial.
Well, here's you really want to, I know, really, you're right. But here's how you want to really fix the NFL, you really want to fix this problem, stop betting on the games.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you're going to have the casinos and the sponsors say, whoa, we're not taking it in like we're supposed to be. What's up with that? Okay.
Right, John. And that's where my point was going, is not betting on games, not, you know, boycotting, because boycotting, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know?
No, it's not.
You know, not betting on games, and, you know, maybe not buying as much apparel either. You know?
Yeah. Stop buying the swag. That's exactly right. Stop buying the swag and stop betting on the games. You're going to watch anyway. If you got season tickets, as most teams have, you know, tens of thousands of season ticket holders anyway, you're going to go, okay? The stadiums are still going to fill. They're still going to buy the beer and the popcorn and the hot dogs and all that stuff. But the only way you hit them in the pocketbook is by attacking the periphery. And you hit the gambling proceeds and you hit the swag proceeds. And if you can do that, you might grab some attention.
Right, exactly.
Wow.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Chris, thanks for the phone call. Some really excellent points by the callers today. All right, so let's sort of recap here again. You can reach us on the program, webradio@patriots.com, the email. The Ace Ticket Hotline, and early is better than later. We're going to start getting into emails and Facebook posts and tweets coming up.
We have quite a few emails there, I see.
Yep, so we're going to roll through them here. But the Ace Ticket Hotline, the quickest, easiest way to get us is on the hotline because that usually gets the priority on the show. It's 508-298-0398. You want to hit me up on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E is the last name, and the Twitter account is @JRook0722. You want to tweet, you want to Facebook, you want to post, you want to email, get up and do it.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the red zone, Tim. Lethal. Pfft, rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call *NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
Now is your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Patriots playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call 508-298-0398. That's 508-298-0398. Now, back to your host, John Rook.
Welcome back in the playbook. You can also do it on Twitter, at JRook0722, and John.Rook is the Facebook address. I got a bunch of Facebook posts I am going to get into. In the meantime...
But speaking of Facebook,
oh yes,
there's a new rage that is blowing up on Facebook.
Yes, I've been catching some wind of this.
But I want to play. So you know the song that's like swept the nation this summer.
Yeah,
the Carly Jepsen song.
Yes,
and I think many on like those VH1 MTV yes. networks are saying like this is the song of the summer. Blah 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 blah.
And I agree because I still have it ringing in my head.
This is it.
Right.
For all the people, you know, football fans that might not like this kind of poppy type music. This is Andy Hart music. This is what he likes. He likes the Katy Perry, Carly Jepsen.
Okay. We understand. That was the song of the summer. I do agree with that.
So this new song is basically the same beat, the same catchy, you know, beat, but it has, you know, new lyrics.
Oh yeah.
And it's courtesy of KFAN FM in Minneapolis.
Okay.
So I want to credit them because I think this is pretty catchy.
Let it rip.
I threw my wish in a well. Got a call from Roger Goodell. Wanna ref the NFL. I said I'm on my way. I trade my soul for a wish. Personally thank the commish. Am I prepared for this? Who cares? I'm on my way. Coaches, stare was holding. Ripped jersey, skin was showing. Missed call, no whistle blowing. Which way is the ball going? Save me. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. It's hard to call right. Never replay. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. And all the other boys, they try to blame me. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. I took my time with the call. I had to break up a brawl. Coach gave me no slack at all. I think I missed that play. They beg and grumble and steal. How many players allowed on the field? Is this crap fake or real? Hey, focus on the play. Coaches, stare was holding. Ripped jersey, skin was showing. Missed call, no whistle blowing. Which way is the ball going? Save me. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. It's hard to call right. Never replay. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. And all the other boys, they try to blame me. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. The jumbo screen shows the replay. I missed it so bad. I missed it so bad. I missed it so, so bad. The whole stadium's in dismay. I missed it so bad. I missed it so bad. I missed it so, so bad.
That is unbelievable.
Pretty good, huh?
That's awesome.
And the guy who made it, his name is Seth Hake.
Seth Hake?
Yeah, and he's from KFAN FM 100.3 in Minneapolis. So
was there like production guy or their bit guy or whatever there at the radio station?
It seems like it. And they have, if people want to look on Facebook, you can find it or on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's all over the place.
Yeah,
and,
I'm sure now.
They have pictures of, you know, these new replacement refs, and some of them are just hilarious. They go with the music.
That's awesome.
And so, I mean, it's unfortunate, but I mean, here's a guy that kind of, this actually made me laugh for the first time.
Oh, that's hysterical. That is hysterical. I had actually heard that that was something that was going around, and then Kevin mentioned it, so we had to play it for you. And if you want to, I'll tell you what, let's do, Kev, before the end of the show, let's play it again.
Sure.
We'll have it on podcast form, so you can obviously download the podcast as soon as we're done with the live version today, and then you'll have it again if you need to find it or whatever. But we'll play it again in case you want to hear it toward the end of the program, or for those that might be tuning in late. But that's hysterical. And it really hits the nail on the head, doesn't it? How can you possibly really, how can you blame these guys? You can't blame them. They're doing exactly what the NFL has asked them to do. Come in and try to do your best, boys. You know, but they're not trained to do this. They haven't seen guys move this fast. Take Lance Easley, for instance, the guy that blew the call last night on the Monday Night Football game and called it a touchdown when it wasn't a touchdown. Dude was reffing JUCO games. You think he's seen anybody run as fast as any of those players? You think he's seen linemen run as fast as those linemen ran last night? Come on. You know, that's wow. Just wow. So, anyway. Whew. All right, we'll recap for you again coming up in a little bit. In the meantime, let's get to some emails.
I'll share it on your wall too. John, the link.
Yeah, do. Yeah. So he'll put it up on my Facebook wall. So if you want to find it and you don't have time to look for it, if you're, you know, actually trying to get some work done today, believe me, I sympathize. I've been trying to do that all morning as well, and the old computer screwed up on me today. So at any rate, we'll put it up on the Facebook wall here momentarily. In the meantime, Bob in London writes, John, hope this email finds you well. Correct me if my memory fails me, but it seemed like on Sunday the Pats were content to just rush the front four on most passing plays, even some third and long, and hardly blitzed. Even accounting for the holding penalties that weren't called, the D-line didn't put up a Giants-esque performance. Why no support from the backers when it was quite obvious the front four weren't getting near Flacco? And with so many defenders dropping back, how were they still getting torched in the passing game? Boggles my mind. After 2 weeks of improved D, I felt a bit like I'd hit 88 miles per hour in the DeLorean and landed in 2011. That's a good one, Bob. He said, on the plus side, I thought the O-line seemed a little better. Brady looked to be a lot more composed when the pressure did come. I was impressed with the receiving core. It was nice to see Welker heavily involved again and Lloyd being productive on the outside. And onwards to Buffalo. Hopefully the regular refs are back. The replacements need punching in the face for 15 minutes every quarter of an hour. Again, I'm not going to blame the replacement refs. I did think that the linebackers have to be called into question. That would certainly be a legitimate nitpick, I think, defensively from Sunday night. Largely because the front four was not doing the job. I really thought that Baltimore's front line did a better than adequate job, although I understand that there was a lot of complaining after the fact from the Patriots defense that Chandler Jones was being held on just about every play by Michael Orr. It looked that there were like two or three calls, I think actually replays that came through that were shown on NBC where clearly Chandler was being held and there was no call by our friends, the replacement officials. So bottom line is you still have to figure out a way to overcome that deficiency even if the calls are not being made, getting back to one of my original points earlier in the program today. Have to find a way to overcome this. So maybe you blitz. Maybe you try to put more pressure in Flacco's face because he had all stinking day. What'd they get to him? Once? And against, a secondary that we all know still plays soft, and I think that was the biggest problem a lot of us had, that they seemed soft in coverage. Flacco has all day to throw against that secondary. Certainly gonna make Torrey Smith and Jones, those guys, you're gonna make them look like, all pro guys. By the way, just before I forget, I wanted to say this about Torrey Smith and the fact that, he learned about his brother's death and just before the kickoff, literally hours before the game started, and he was able to somehow put that aside and come through with an unbelievable performance. And that he is a tribute to the human spirit. There's just no doubt about that. God bless him and God bless his family. He raised his brother. He's raised his siblings. And to have something like that happen before you go on the field, it's so, so difficult to focus and do the job that you're paid to do. But he is, in my estimation, a professional in every sense of the word for being able to put that aside and focus on his job and then turn in the unbelievable performance that he did. And while it's easy to sit here and nitpick things the Patriots didn't do that cost them the game, the other side of me wants to congratulate Torrey Smith for having, you know, game of his life in the face of unbelievable adversity. I just felt like that needed to be said before we let it slip away. James in Capron, Virginia. John, the real question from this loss is, why wasn't the game-winning field goal reviewed by the replay officials? A game-winning kick that close to being no good should always be reviewed. It's not. It's not reviewable. The reason it's not reviewable, based on the couple of opinions that I've seen from officials, is because it's very difficult unless you have a camera situated right across the bar, if you will. And even then, sometimes it's subject to opinion. You can't always get an accurate point of view. That's why you have officials standing underneath the goalpost, and in their best estimate and guesstimate, in a lot of ways, letting you know whether a field goal or a kick is good or it's not good because of the angle involved. So rather than risk it, they, you know, there is no way that you can review it because the angle isn't true. For instance, it did look like the kick was no good. But, and I would argue that from, like I said, 32 yards out, the length of Billy Cundiff's miss here in Foxborough last January, that would not have been good. But it curled late. It curled late. And so it probably did go over the right upright, and that is good. All it has to do is go over the upright. It doesn't have to get inside the upright. It just got to go over it. So, James, that's, according to the NFL, it's not a reviewable play. Now, maybe, you know, you fix the problem by, you know, sticking a camera on the goalpost. You know, even then, I'm not sure it gives you a true view, but it certainly would be worth experimenting with. We've got this ability to have this technology, and now technology is taking it over. In fact, a lot of people would argue now that technology is the only way to go because the real guys out on the field can't do the job. Can we figure out a way to get the right combination of the two things? Stripper says, I didn't like the two pass play attempts before the two-minute warning. Just run the ball and punt. Okay, that's legitimate. That's legitimate. By the way, Strippers, what happened to your Sooners this week? You knew I wasn't going to let it go. Luca says, John, did you think that field goal was even good? Anyway, even after this loss, I feel good about the team and think we're still going to go all the way this year. Well, the eternal optimist, Luca. Thank you. I have to admit, my initial instinct was, like everybody else that I was watching the game with, he missed that ball. He missed it. He missed that kick. That was my first instinct. But then upon further review, after watching it replay, I realized, okay, our depth perception looking at it from our angle, the only one we had was the opposite end zone camera. Our depth perception was not going to give you a true picture. You really needed something that was right there on the upright shooting straight up. That's really what you need. I think you might be able to get a pretty accurate view if you're able to do that on all four uprights. You might be able to get that view. Yeah, and unfortunately, I do think it was good. Jim in Florida. John, my nitpick this week is the fourth quarter coaching by the Pats and Sunday night's loss. That's a good one. Blowing a 9-point lead midway through the fourth quarter? Come on. Just as we saw in last year's Super Bowl, if the Pats offense could have converted in their final possession, we could have closed it out with a win. And the same thing would have happened Sunday night, and Welker and Lloyd were open all night, but ignored when we needed that final first down to close out the Ravens. Poor play calling. We didn't get him. Poor play calling on offense. I could not agree more. I thought the offense spit the bit in the fourth quarter when they had a chance to put the game away. You know, I thought the linebacking core was indecisive. I thought the secondary was way too soft, as we saw, because they weren't getting pressure on Flacco. Those were my main nitpicks defensively. And in offense, they spit the bit in the fourth quarter. They forgot how to learn how to play with a lead. Jim says, I know this team is two plays from being 3-0, but was anyone actually satisfied with our effort at home against Arizona or with our fourth quarter against the Ravens? This Pats team is better than that. It's a 60-minute game, and these games shouldn't be coming down to the last play of the game. There is no doubt about that one. No doubt about that one. All right, back to the phones. Thanks for hanging on. Jefferson's in Salt Lake City. You're in the playbook, Jefferson.
Hey, John, how you doing, bud?
I'm good, man.
Good, man. Hey, man, I listen to your podcast almost every single time you come out. It's a pleasure to talk to you, my man.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I wanted to say was, you know, I mean, it's a problem the offense couldn't get it done at the end. It's a problem that Devin McCourty, you know, got that you know, pass interference call at the very end, which was blatant, obviously. But the problem is there's no team in the NFL that can continue to do it over and over again when the refs keep giving them chances. I mean, you look at the championship teams, you look at the Super Bowl teams, there's not a team in the NFL in the history of the game that has played a perfect game. You know, every winning team makes mistakes during the game. Every losing team makes mistakes during the game. The difference is when you get phantom pass interference calls and phantom holding calls that extend two drives for the Baltimore Ravens that end up in touchdowns, what are you going to do? That you can't expect any more from the offense. I mean, or forgive me, the defense as well as the offense. If you keep taking those chances and giving them back to the other team, eventually that team is going to get the job done. We're talking about professional athletes. You give them enough chances, there's no defense that can stop any defense or any offense in this league if you give them that many chances, in my opinion. We nitpick and we talk about, you know, the Pats defense biting the bullet. In my opinion, I thought Devin McCourty played a pretty decent game until the end of that fourth quarter, obviously. But, you know, I mean, you can't ask the guy to continue to do it time and time again when the refs take the ball away and give it back to the Ravens.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I would agree. You sometimes you keep dipping into the well, so to speak, and eventually you're going to come up dry. So I would have an issue, though, with you concerning McCourty. I thought what we saw from Devin and really from Kyle Arrington as well, I thought we saw them lay off of the receivers a little bit more. And I don't know if that was the game plan, but frankly, I think they expected to have more of a pass rush, and they didn't get it. And again, I realized that there were some holding issues on a guy like Chandler Jones that never got called. But again, it's still up to the team to adjust. And so you have to figure out a way to adjust. And my biggest nitpick a week ago was, you know, the fact that this team did not adjust when it was clear that Arizona was doing one thing and the Patriots could not do another. Well, we got some adjustment in the off week or during the week, but then they didn't keep up with it. They didn't stay consistent with it in the fourth quarter. You know, I said to anybody who would listen during the game, you get up 13-0, and you're up 9 again, or 6 again, yes, what was it, 6 again at halftime, and you get up 9 again in the fourth quarter. I said, they got to keep the foot on the pedal. They have to keep the foot on the pedal. They didn't do that on offense. So the defensive part was, is I thought that they had to be able to adjust. They didn't adjust. The offensive part of it is, well, they did okay to start. Why didn't they keep it up? Why did they change the play calls? It's because they're still in that period of time where they're trying to decide who we are and what we're going to be. And I think they're trying to move to what we're going to be more quickly than they should, if that makes any sense.
No, absolutely, and I completely agree. And I think the offense definitely kind of laid an egg at the end. I mean, that's unfortunate to see.
They did.
Again, I mean,
they did.
You got to look at, you know, I mean, these calls, especially late in the game. I mean, you look at last night's game. I mean, I know that, you know, beating a dead horse here, you know, over what happened in you know, the game last night.
Yeah.
But you know, all of these calls, you know, towards the end of the game, you don't give a team a chance to adjust when you make those calls towards the end of the game. You make a bad call at the beginning of the game, obviously it's not going to have nearly as much impact as it does, you know, at the end of the game when the game's finished and all's said and done with.
Right.
But no, I completely agree with you. I think that, you know, the offense, you know, laid an egg at the end of that game, and it was frustrating to watch, but, you know, I guess it is what it is. One last thing.
Sure.
Some of these replacement refs, they work the lingerie league, right?
You know, I think some of them have. I haven't looked at the roster. I tried to look. I found a couple of rosters of, and I'm not sure they were the entire list of the replacement officials, but most of the guys were high school and JUCO and small college officials. I think some of them have worked some of the lingerie league, but I can't say that that's the case for all of them.
Yeah, the only thing that I'm thinking of is I would imagine that those referees had a lot more distraction to deal with in that league than they would in this one.
That's all I got, John.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Keep up the good work, man. Hopefully I can talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Jefferson. Appreciate the phone call. Look forward to hearing from you again. He brings a pretty good point. Those guys, above all, should be able to work through distraction. Big Al in Valdosta, Georgia. What's up, Big Al?
Hey, hey, John. What's happening, babe?
Same old.
Hey. First of all, I agree about Torrey Smith. A lot of guts. Kind of reminds you of the night that Brett Favre played.
Yes.
After his dad had passed.
Yes. And, yeah. It certainly was reminiscent of that. Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to pile on the refs anymore. That's all been said. I would say this. I think this is actually having the replacement players. I think back in, you know, 25 years ago or whatever it was when we had the replacement players, I think actually didn't damage the game as much as this is damaging the game. At least the replacement players were all pretty much of, you know, there was bad offense, bad defense. It kind of leveled itself out. You might have been watching what you thought was a USFL game, but it was, you know, there was...
Watch it now. I was in the USFL, okay?
Oh, were you? Well, there was equal talent on both sides, less on
True.
Both sides, but it balanced out.
True.
This, there isn't even, you know, a balance here. These are just bad refs, and there are other bad refs throughout the league, and the players are the same. So this is really hurting, and I hope they get it fixed.
Yeah, they need to. I think there's no question we have seen that. It's going to continue to escalate. Next time a bad call is made, we're all going to, you know, or fans certainly from the two teams involved are certainly going to jump all over it. It's a problem that's not going away, and even the NFL has to recognize that. So hopefully, there will be further discussions this week about it. As I said in the opening hour, Al, this screams for leadership from someone outside of the league office.
Right.
Read into that, you know, a Bob Kraft, Jerry Jones type
right.
to step up and
right.
and get your fellow owners together and say, we got to get this done before, you know, ridiculous turns into sublime. I mean, right yep. now the NFL loves it because it's a little soap opera, and any publicity is good publicity.
That's exactly right. They're not being hurt by this at all.
No.
That's why I'm afraid that the owners are gonna.
It will.
As long as our TV ratings are good, who cares?
But if it starts to, you know, it can hurt them in the pocketbook in other ways.
Right.
As I talked about in the last hour briefly, don't wager on the game, or don't go buy the souvenirs, or
right.
don't go buy the jerseys and the hats and, you know, the swag. Don't if you really are upset with it and you want to do something about it, that's really the only way I think that a fan can do that. I had somebody tweet me a little while ago as well that I believe there is an online a petition that you can sign here. Let me see if I can find the information. Yeah, here we go. There's a petition to sign for the NFL. To listen to the fans. Let me see if I can find the site here. I'm going to click on the link here. So pardon me for being all internet as we're going
no,
here.
No, that's okay. And, you know, the NFL has tried,
if you go to
Major League Baseball, which sort of has this
right.
let them eat cake
yeah.
attitude toward
go
the
to,
fans.
Go to,
the NFL tries to, you know, tries to at least listen to the fans, I think.
Go to change.org, okay? That's the site that you get a lot
change.
Of the...
Change.org,
yeah,
okay.
A lot of the petitions you can sign online. You go to change.org, and when it says browse petition at the top, just put for NFL in there, and you'll find it. And
I'll go there. I will go there after this call.
And it says here, just to read the first little part of it, it says, I'm an NFL fan, and I demand that the NFL owners empower the NFL and Roger Goodell to end lockout of NFL referees. Mm-hmm. The integrity of the game, image of the league, and health and safety of the players have been compromised by your unilateral lockout.
Mm-hmm.
I receive
right.
regular letters and emails from you describing how much you care about player health and safety, but you turn around and lock out the real refs who made you responsible or who you made responsible for health and safety during games in the first place. This behavior is putting players at an unnecessary risk. Yeah. All right, and yada, yada, you can go on and read it for yourself. But, okay, there is
change.
An outlet.
Org.
There is yeah. an outlet. If you go to change.org, you can find it and you can
I
sign it.
I will do that. I will do that. Now, listen, as for the Patriots,
yes,
I think this what happened Sunday night is kind of indicative of what we've seen of the team in this to this extent. In the last 3-4 minutes, running into halftime, this is the best team in the league. The last 3-4 minutes, running to the end of the game, we really struggle.
Mm.
And it's really weird because you'd think of those situations as having a lot in common, you know, going into halftime, you know, timeouts, you know, clock management, whatever. Going into halftime, we just are lights out. We scored at the buzzer Sunday night, right before the half.
Yep.
But at the end of the game, it just seems like the whole thing's a mystery.
Yeah.
We had We had a 2nd and 9 with 2 minutes and 12 seconds to go
mm-hmm.
at the ball at midfield. A 2nd and 9. Now, I know I get into this clock management and I sort of sound like, you know, old man yells at cloud. I know that. I can't help it, John. All right. It just seems like it's so simple to me. 2nd and 9, 2:12 to go. The opponent has one timeout.
Mm-hmm.
What do? You hand the ball off. I don't care if Stephen Ridley makes a half a yard. Hand the ball off. You either go to the 2-minute warning, which case you have a break and you think about what you want to do on 3rd and 9 or 3rd and 8, or the opponent takes their last time out before the 2-minute warning.
Right.
Either one of those scenarios are good. Either you've gone through the 2-minute warning and they've only got one timeout left, or you forced them to burn their last timeout before mm-hmm. the 2-minute warning.
Mm-hmm.
And you've still got the ball 3rd and basically 8 or 9 yards instead
right.
of 2nd or 8 or 9. In right. other words, there's no wrong scenario for handing the ball off.
Right.
The one wrong scenario is what we did. We threw an incomplete pass.
Yeah, it stops the clock and you don't move.
The one thing you can do that's
right.
wrong,
right.
we chose to do the thing that was wrong.
Well, I would tell
and
you,
then,
Al, that
and then we throw another incomplete because you got to throw now on 3rd and 9. And so then we end up with 2 minutes and 1 second. The opponent has not used a timeout, and we still have the 2-minute warning.
Well,
now, when we punt the ball, the clock's going to stop change of possession anyway, so that kind of merged into the 2-minute warning, so that was maybe a no harm, no foul. But I just don't understand, John.
Well, here's
with 2 minutes and 12 seconds left.
Understood.
2nd and 9. Why we're not handing the ball off?
Understood. Here's the problem. Okay, if
mm-hmm.
they don't hand the ball off, or if they do hand the ball off and he, you know, is thrown for a loss, as we've seen happen over the first couple of weeks
so
here,
what?
We kill him. We still kill him. And they probably deserve to get the criticism because on a 2nd and 9, what's the best way to get a first down on that play? What I'm saying is that. What they probably should have done.
You've got another play.
I understand that. But all I'm saying is that you're putting a lot of marbles in one basket here. So what you need to do is you need to probably resort to what you do best. And that's really what they had done the entire game. They went back to the way the Patriots had played over the last couple of years with a lot of the 3 and 4 wide and spread it out. And I don't really have a problem with the call. This is
working at the end of the game.
No, but that's it because they weren't consistent with it. And I also believe it's because Baltimore knew a little bit what was coming. So maybe, I understand your point of view, but perhaps maybe they realize the Patriots really want to run the clock out here, so we're going to gamble a little bit, and they gambled correctly.
Well,
that's all I can tell you. You got to figure out a way to switch it up, but I think you're almost, if it doesn't work, you're going to get yourself into a no-win scenario.
See, John, the difference between you and me is you're worried about the play working. I'm not worried about the play working on 2nd and 9 with 2:12 to go. I do not care what happens to the play. I care that the clock starts
mm-hmm.
and you force the opponent to make a decision.
Well, that's true.
That's what I care about.
That's true.
I don't care if we gain a yard, lose a yard, gain nothing, gain a half inch, lose 18 inches.
Yeah.
I don't care what the result. I care that the clock starts and you force the opponent to make a decision. Am
okay.
I going to use my last timeout before the 2-minute warning, which some teams do that, but you have burned your last timeout.
Right.
Okay. Or you run it down to the 2-minute warning if they want to preserve their last
right.
timeout.
I get it.
In
yeah.
which case, you get a free timeout.
Right. I get
to
it.
Think about
I get it.
What
I
you're
get
going
it.
To do.
I get it. I get it. I get
else.
It. Al. Okay. I get it. I know. Believe me, I'm worked up like you are about it. I understand that.
It just seems so simple. It's just common sense. And
well,
yet,
but
you know, we seem to just mismanage these things at the end of games repeatedly. And yet, at the end of the first half, we are like Einstein.
All right.
I mean, at the end of the first half,
right.
it's
Al,
unbelievable.
Al, you got to step away from the brick wall because now, bashing your head against the wall is starting to hurt me. All right, hang on. All right, let's dial it down just a notch because
I
understand. I get it. But let's hang on a second here. All right,
okay.
Because
I'm right here for you.
All right. All we need to do is we have to understand, again, like I said previously, why it's happening. And I think I gave you a little bit of insight as to why it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They're caught between a rock and a hard place in trying to be who they are and be who they want to be.
Okay.
Okay? And that's really the only way I think that this is explainable right now. So we're going to have some moments where we think they should go one way and they go another. That is just going to happen as this metamorphosis continues to go on. My greater concern here is that we're going to continue to blow another opportunity and take another year off the shelf life of a guy named Tom Brady.
Right, right.
And
that
I think you have to look at the bigger picture. I want to win now. And I cannot believe that every guy in that locker room doesn't want to win now.
And that includes the coaches
because they know that the window is short.
Through the last 3 minutes of the game.
Well,
Al,
you're missing the point. They are thinking about the last 3 minutes of the game. They're just not choosing the right way to go.
Well, you know, two words: common sense. You don't have to know what you're about to know about common sense and what the rules are and what the clock, what happens to the clock when you do.
Well, but in this instance, I don't know that common sense dictates, because I think that there certainly is room for wiggle room here in terms of common sense, because there really is no good play to run in that instance on second and nine. They're just not. Second and nine, normally you're not going to get a first down off a run. You're just not.
I don't care if I've got Joe Namath. I don't care if I've got the greatest quarterback, Joe Montana. You know what I'm doing? I'm handing the ball off in that situation. I don't care if I've got three I
got to put you on hold, Al, because honestly, I'm getting a splitting headache, and I love you. I love you like a brother, but Okay, hang on just a second. Okay, I understand exactly how you feel. But we got to dial this down just a second, okay? Because the whole issue here is that what you think is common sense isn't necessarily common sense to the coaches that are making the calls. Okay? You think it's common sense. No, it's not. Unless you're in the NFL locker room with them, it's not common sense. You and I think it might be common sense, but clearly if they keep coming back to it and coming back to it and coming back to it, then it's not common sense, is it? That's the way they're going to coach. Now, you want to take issue with the plays they're calling, that's different. And you can certainly take issue with it, and I know you do. All right, let's get a break in here, and then I got to get in some more emails. Al, I appreciate your phone call. I always appreciate your participation in the show. I also want to try to get to some of the Facebooks and some of the Twitters as well, because people have taken the time to write and share their opinions, and I'm going to share them all with you coming up in the playbook.
Hey, it's Rob Gronkowski, Pat's tight end and big-time Duncan fan. The secret to my success? Coach drew up a play called Gronk, run downfield, catch ball out of air, and we give you freshly made bakery sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. I say Coach is a genius.
No defense keeps Gronk from his freshly made bakery sandwiches. Hurry into Dunkin' Donuts and grab your go-to sandwich today. Gronk runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. New England Patriots and Patriots and related logos are trademarks of New England Patriots, LLC.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. An exciting Patriots season is here, and Ace Ticket is proud to be the official fan travel partner of the New England Patriots. Ace Ticket is your trusted source. We have the best seats at the lowest prices for all your favorite Boston teams. Ace Ticket is now selling Celtics and Bruins tickets to all games, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square or right across the street from Boston Garden. Call 1-800-MY-SEATS or visit aceticket.com. 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I love this card.
With my Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, I earn more cash back for the things I buy most.
Cash back for the things I buy every day.
I earn 1% cash back on every purchase, everywhere, every time.
2% on groceries.
And 3% on gas. Automatically, no hoops to jump through.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
That's 1% cash back on a cut and color.
2% back on food for the neighborhood barbecue.
And 3% cash back on getting the kids to soccer practice and football and baseball.
Extra cash back on groceries and gas. That's my kind of card.
Earn 1, 2, 3% cash back for the things you buy most with the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. Apply online or at a Bank of America near you. Quarterly maximum on grocery and gas bonus rewards. To learn more, go to bankofamerica.com/getcashback.
Finally, a card for the real world.
Copyright 2012, Bank of America Corporation.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live. Shop retailers and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors and take in the sunset or the view overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Kids Club Story Time every Tuesday to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop, dine, enjoy.
My name is Terry, and not too long ago, I couldn't tell a first down from a touchdown, a flea flicker from a flea circus. But then, I got NFL Mobile from Verizon. I can watch every Thursday, Sunday, and Monday night NFL game live, right on my smartphone.
Nice call on the game yesterday, Terry.
I told you they couldn't stop the run. Plus, with access to NFL Network, I can watch highlights whenever I want.
Huge fantasy week. How did you know to start Mayo?
Woman's intuition, I guess. And with NFL Red Zone, I won't miss a touchdown on Sunday afternoons.
Up top, T-Mac.
You know it.
Offense is looking good, huh, Terry?
Good? They've been lethal in the Red Zone, Tim. Lethal. Rookie.
With NFL Mobile on Verizon 4G LTE, no one will know the game better than you. Call Star NFL to get it now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime, message, and data rates may apply. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Remember, don't call or text while driving.
This is Patriots Playbook with John Rook on Patriots.com Radio. Want to get inside the playbook? Call John on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-298-0398 or email the show at webradio@patriots.com.
All right, welcome back into the playbook. Half an hour still to go on the program before we get into fantasy football issues here on Patriots.com Radio. Let me get in some emails and some Facebook posts. I also have some tweets I'm going to share, and then that Colby maybe parody that K-Fan in Minneapolis did. We played that at the end of the opening hour. If you missed it, I'm going to play it for you again. I've also posted it on my, or Kevin rather has posted it on my Facebook page. So go to John.Rook on Facebook. And if you're not a friend on Facebook, well, then submit the request and then we'll be friends, won't we? Here we go. Joe in Michigan says, John, tough loss, especially since it was 2 weeks in a row. I'm not worried, though. If you look at the schedule, the Patriots are yet to play any divisional opponents. If we take a look at those times, each of them lost a very key player this past weekend. That's very true. Jets lost Darrelle Revis. Dolphins lost Reggie Bush for a few weeks. Bills lost C.J. Spiller, which is huge after Fred Jackson went out in the opener. I expect after the next few weeks, Patriots will regain their usual lead over the rest of the division. I know we lost Hernandez, but as key as he is to this team, the injuries the other teams have suffered will prove to be more costly. Those are all good points, Joe, in Michigan. As we mentioned, though, in the opening hour, we're kind of looking at big picture here. I really think most fans feel like Patriots should still be able to handle the division in the AFC East. That's with all due respect toward the Jets, the Bills, and certainly the Dolphins. Looking at it in a bigger picture instance, now you got to hope that Baltimore starts getting knocked off a little bit. You have to hope that Pittsburgh whacks them twice at the very least. Because you've lost any head-to-head now you have with the Ravens, and I think we all expect the Ravens to be there at the very end. Eddie says, guys, again, a game turns from a win into a loss due to the defense not being able to protect a lead. For a so-called defensive genius, Belichick's D never seems to stop the opposition. When was the last time we had any confidence that the defense would come through? When was the defense last feared by the opposition? Did Bill just get lucky by inheriting McGinnis, Law, Bruschi, and Johnson? At least the offense looked good against the Ravens, but that was a game that we should have won. He says, by the way, Danny Woodhead, the new Walt Garrison, if you need 3 yards, he'll get 3 yards. If you need 6 yards, he'll get you 3 yards. Good cowboy reference there, Eddie. I honestly don't think it was. I mean, I understand. Yeah, the defense protecting a lead, well, I think you can certainly put some of the blame on the defense. But frankly, as well as the offense played, I think overall, they stopped playing in the last, 4 minutes of the game. They just stopped playing. I just think that they got too conservative. And I think the play calls were not good. And I think you have to be able to learn to play with the lead, and they just didn't play well enough with it. So I think you have to give an equal dose of the blame to the offense on Sunday night for not being able to give the defense a hand and help them out. Clearly, the Patriots are going to win this game by scoring points. They had to know that 30 was not going to be, a good enough number. As it turns out, 33 would have done the trick. Travis in Collierville, Tennessee. If the $3 million issue that I heard today is the one that's causing both sides from being far apart on a deal, it's just pathetic. That's approximately $100,000 per owner that the owners won't budge on. I love Kraft, but he can drop $100,000 like I can drop a buck for a candy bar. It's time to swallow the pride, take the loss, move on for the love of the game. I would agree, Travis. And again, I was told roughly $3 to $3.3 million is what the two sides are apart. $100,000 per owner, pony it up. Everybody comes out smelling good on this thing. And we're early enough in the season where there's still 13 regular season games, four teams to play, that there's plenty of time to make up for screwed up calls. Plenty of time. David Monterey says, I'm ready to start the boycott talk. We need to figure out a way for us as fans to pressure the NFL and the commissioner. We're not getting the product that we pay for. The NFL has a history of being the most marketable product. Now we're getting crap. I can't support this. I'm tweeting whack job Goodell all day until every day until he takes action. Okay. Well, I think the boycott talk is a little silly, Dave, but I understand your thoughts and sentiments. And really, if you want to do something, if you go to, again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, if you go to change.org and search NFL, you'll find the petition for the NFL owners and for the league to come to an agreement with the real refs and hopefully move on. So I encourage you to go there if that's where you want to do. Eddie says, a lot of the problems on the defense is lack of pressure. Where are the extra rushers? Now, this is getting to the issue, Eddie. Okay, I mentioned this earlier. This is getting to the issue. The times when our defense has been good, at least, or been at its best, is when we have brought pressure, whether it's been Tippett and Blackman or McGinnis and Vrabel. More pressure would also help the sketchy secondary cut down on the time that they need to cover. Absolutely. They did not adjust to getting to Joe Flacco, and he had all day to sit back there and torch the secondary. He threw for almost four bills, okay? That's unsatisfactory. Now, again, Joe Flacco is better than, I would say, maybe, how many teams we got in the league? 32? Starting quarterback-wise, where would you rank him? I'd say you probably have to put him in the top six or seven right now, based on what we saw certainly Sunday night. So he's probably better than at least 25, 26 other quarterbacks who are starting in the NFL. So you didn't face a bad guy. So you've got to do something to put some pressure on the guy, because a guy like that can kill you, and he ultimately did. Steve in Albany. I'm not buying the argument that these owners don't care because they're still generating revenues and that nothing will change because ratings are still high. This is damaging the brand and could have devastating long-term consequences. If the ratings are high because people are tuning in to watch the circus instead of the competitive brand that has made the NFL what it is today, does that make Robert Kraft happy? Yes. Well, maybe not happy. Let's just put it this way. Satisfied. And I would argue, devastating long-term consequences? Wouldn't the strike and wouldn't the lockout last year, if it had lasted longer than it did, wouldn't that have long-term consequences? Hasn't the league, though, always bounced back from its labor troubles? Of course it has. You want devastating long-term consequences? Let's talk NHL right now. Those guys are freaking loco, as far as I'm concerned, because all those players are going over to Europe to play. They have options. NFL players don't. Fans will come back to this game. Howard in Stratford, Connecticut. His nitpicks are, one, Devin McCourty. Two, Josh McDaniels. Three, the run D. This loss, although disappointing because it was there for taking as a win, it's not as disappointing as last week against the Cardinals, where they were outplayed all game. They came to play this game. They just made too many mistakes, and a very good team beat them in their house. See, that's really kind of getting down to the crux of the matter. Good job, Howard. Baltimore's good. They were preseason Super Bowl favorite in the AFC with the Patriots and maybe the Houston Texans, right? So losing in Baltimore by 1 point on a last-second field goal, Come on. You know, I think we can all understand that. It's the way that they lost it, I think, that we have a problem with. And the way that things transpired, if they had done things slightly differently, there's no doubt in my mind it could have been a different story. Howard says, the replacement refs, what did people expect when you took all the vets away and replaced them with rookies? Yes, the replacement refs have experience in the game of football, but so do college players coming in as rookies. These guys don't have the experience at this level, and they'll make mistakes just like rookies do every week in every game until they gain the experience at this level. I will buy that. As for the NFL and the real refs, they're both being greedy. Need to stop the immature behavior and, for the good of the game, compromise. Stop trying to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg. That's the best analogy I've heard today. You're trying to kill the goose that's laying the golden egg. All for his meat. That seems kind of sick, but it's true. All right, Brian in Vermont, you're in the playbook. Hey, Brian.
Hey, John, how are you?
Good, man. What's on your mind?
A lot of the stuff that people have been saying is true, but, you know, for a team that had the easiest strength of schedule in the NFL this year, we've played three pretty decent teams. The Titans, although they're 1-2, they played real tough. They beat Detroit last week,
right,
or, you know, this past Sunday, and they played against the Chargers, who are probably going to be one of the best in the AFC this year.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals are undefeated, and the Ravens lost one tough game and played us real tough. You know, you can't push the panic button yet.
No. And I think, you know, that's something that we have to all ultimately look at in the big picture. It's just 3 weeks. I think you can understand that, you know, at some point in time, this team and all teams, really, even all contending teams, usually figure out a way to stub their toe against a team that they probably should have beaten. It just so happened. It happened in week two this year for the Patriots against the Cardinals. And the Cardinals, I think, have proven to be a pretty decent team, especially with the way they beat the crap out of Philadelphia at home this week. So,
exactly.
So, I get that. I get that. And the fact that they lost this week by 1 point on the road against a team that's every bit as good as they are, I get that too. So it really shouldn't come as a shock that they're 1-2. We're all disappointed because we all expected better and we're not quite getting it. And there are different reasons why they're not as good as we thought they would be. So
yeah,
if we
take a look at the rest of the schedule.
Yes.
Buffalo,
that's right.
Denver.
That's exactly right, Brian.
Seattle's going to be tough.
Right. Yeah.
But the Jets, the Rams,
well,
Buffalo again, Indianapolis.
It may not be tough, Brian. It may not be tough as long as we, you know, don't have a Hail Mary in the end zone at the end of the game.
Well, there you go.
I mean, come on. Let's face it. Green Bay had that game won. We all know that. Green Bay probably should have won the game. We all know that still today. And what happened. You don't, and this gets back to a point I made in the opening hour, okay? This schedule is played out to the point where it is one of the easier schedules in the league, especially for a contending team. So if the Patriots just take care of business from here on out, they should be fine. And then as far as, you know, all the other stuff is concerned, hey, the players themselves have said, look, we have to be held accountable. We have to not let it get to the decision of the officials. And if we can take it out of the officials' hands, we'll be fine. And I think that's the proper attitude to take.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you know, it's tough when you hear, you know, you listen to the radio and you hear people that are, the sky's falling because the Patriots have started 1-2, and you know, I mean, they played some decent teams and they've got a pretty good run coming up of teams that are certainly beatable.
They have a chance to get better, Brian, in a hurry, and maybe in another 3 or 4 weeks, this is all in the distant past. That's very true. So, again, I think it's easy to be upset now, and that's why we have programs like this so we can kind of vent here and examine where the problems are. But, yeah, overall, the big picture is, all right, hey, easy now. We got 13 games left to play. There's no need to go jump off the bridge.
Well, there you go.
Thanks, Brian.
All right.
Thanks for adding some sanity to an otherwise difficult time. Chuck in West Virginia. Chuck, you're in the playbook.
Yes, sir. How you doing today, John?
Great, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Good. I got a fantasy question. Edelman, how is he doing, and what do you think of him?
Well, hang on just a second, because I'm not the fantasy expert. I don't do fantasy. That'll be for Todd and Bill to come up.
We can talk about Edelman, though, for a second. I mean, he...
doesn't want to hold on,
well,
does
no,
he?
But he left the game, you know, more importantly.
From that regard?
Let's talk injury-wise. He left the game at halftime after catching that touchdown pass to end the first half, right?
Yeah.
And then he was never to be seen from again. He came in and out of the locker room several times, and Fred reported today that he saw him leaving with, like, a splint on his thumb.
Hmm.
So, you know, obviously the injury had something to do with his hand, and, you know, even if he was able-bodied with his legs and his arms, if you can't catch the football, you know, you're useless.
Well, there was, I mean, when he left the game, that's when Deion Branch entered.
Yes.
And then Branch, as we know, did come up with a couple of catches, but Branch also almost had his head taken off on a couple of occasions
twice,
as well.
But to answer his question, more or less, I mean,
okay.
Edelman left the game, but it didn't appear to be an ultra-serious thing. It appeared to be some sort of hand issue, and you know, these guys, if they break fingers or whatever, I mean, I can't imagine that's going to keep them out for more than like a week or two.
Does that answer your question, Chuck?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
All right, you got it. Thank you for the phone call. Let's squeeze Melvin in Tennessee in here. Melvin, you're in the playbook.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Melvin. What's up?
Okay. Well, I guess I'm just getting out of class. I'm pretty sure all the Patriots fans have vented about the referees and the play calling.
Yeah.
On that game. I mean, like I said, I could start with the Edelman forearm shot that looked questionable, kind of that looked pretty high to the spikes on the goal line, to the McCourty with the, I mean, the one before that, I mean, I think his last one was pass interference, but definitely not the time before that. And, you know, just playing a game where it's second down and 15 and, they call 5 yards first down. I mean, I'm pretty sure that can be kind of depressing to a defense, and I think that led to a couple of things. But to argue against them, you know, you catch those picks sometimes, and we're on offense. We don't have to worry about the defense. And, you know, I think there are a lot of blown opportunities that, like you just said, that could have eliminated the refs from getting into, you know, influencing the call and influencing the game with a couple of those interceptions.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's them on that. But one more thing I had to say was, you know, that I could date back to last year and this year, was I don't think that, from a defensive back standpoint, I don't think they did, of course, all that well, of course. But I don't think the Ravens could handle us either. So I think towards the end, they just, well, all right, everybody, let's just go for them. We're going to bring the house. The Patriots didn't have that type of that aggressiveness. And they just allowed them to, they could stay with their four-man rush, it seemed like to me. And although they weren't getting there, it looked like they were getting held, in my opinion, a lot of the times. I think we need to change it up, because that's a lot of things that the Jets do. They bring the house on you. They're going to line up to you, try to confuse you, and just bring the house. And, you know, that's the only way you can really stop this offense, because if you just sit back there like they did for a while and just rush with four, just like we couldn't stop them, they could not stop us either. So
that's a good point, and I'm glad you brought that up, Melvin, because we haven't really talked about that. But honestly, yeah, the Ravens really couldn't stop the Patriots. The Patriots, I think, is our biggest nitpick has been today, is the Patriots really stopped themselves late in the game.
Right. So I think you know, with due time, you're allowing this team to go down here and throw these Hail Marys and get these, you know, I mean, Jacoby Jones, he was celebrating as he got the pass interference. I mean, he's letting the crowd and the referees, like, influence him, because he knew he was about to get a call. That's the only thing is, they know if they run down there, they're going to get a call. So, you know, it's just, if you go down there and if you, you know, if you blitz, you should not have time to run a Hail Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like that, you know, they're going to call a flag anyway. So just go down there and go get them. You know, if you go sack flag, or don't bring just a four, and it's been playing this whole game, we're not getting there with four. Bring five or six, confuse them, do something else, because I don't know. This dates back to last year. You know, if you bring the Jets, do it so well. I hate even saying that name, but if that's the one thing they do, but without Revis, you know, I think they have the corners to do that. But, you know, sometimes, I know the first play of the second half last year, when Wes Walker burnt him over the top, that was the one time that I think that, you know, we stopped that. I know we don't have that three deep threat anymore, but I just think we need to bring some more pressure. So it goes back to play calling and stuff last year. I mean,
well,
go get them sometimes.
I would agree with the pressure aspect, and I think that's one of the ways where the defense certainly failed to recognize what was and what wasn't working. And the defensive backs and the linebackers are just way too soft on matters on Sunday night, and they allowed Flacco to basically rip them apart. They need to come up with some kind of an in-game adjustment to not allow him so much comfort level. I mean, the thing that really disgusted me the most, and Melvin, thank you for the phone call so I can get some emails in here. Appreciate the time. Thing that disgusted me the most, gang, really, about Sunday night's game was the fact that the Ravens came out and just stomped on the Patriots to whoop the second half. I mean, they just, they right down the field, what was it? Seven plays, eight plays, 80 yards, boom, gone.
Yeah, and Ray Rice, I think, capped that off.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Don't you spend the halftime adjusting? That was disgusting. That was absolutely disgusting. Very unpatriot-like. All right, I got to get some Facebook posts in here, and then I get back to some emails to wrap up the program. Tim sent me a nice long one here. Tim, I'm going to try to paraphrase a little bit.
I'm going to have to cut that for a drop.
Yeah. Which one?
Tim sent me a nice long one here.
Come on.
It's good. It's good.
He says, I'm not even going to nitpick the game, just the state of the NFL as a whole. Obviously, I'm talking about the refs and the situation they've been thrown into. This game that I love has become a farce, and teams are winning and losing on bad calls. Of 15 games, 10 were decided by one score. That's one possession, one prolonged drive by a poor penalty or non-call, one bad spot. And regarding Monday Night Football, the Packers could lose home field because of this one game. Seattle could snag a wild card spot over another team because of one call. He says, I'm not going to watch any games unless they directly affect the Pats until this situation is fixed. I'm only one person, but a lot of one persons make a difference to ratings. Okay. Then he says, P.S., the football offseason is the longest of the four sports. This wasn't taken care of between February and August is a travesty. That's fair. I do wonder why that they've waited so long. That's true. Axel says, John and Kevin in the booth. Before I start nitpicking, I just wanted to let you guys know how I spend my weekend. Since I live in Sweden, the game started around 2:20 a.m., so I had to record it, and I plan to watch it after school on Monday. So to not have the game spoiled, I didn't turn on a TV, computer, or even my phone all day. Then my school day ended, only to find myself yelling at the top of my lungs, How you paid, and how much did you get? Okay, I see what he's saying. Maybe a little English translation here. It went so far that I thought that the regular refs paid them so that the NFL is forced to give them what they want. I can understand your frustration. Nitpicks. Defense was mostly bad. It all started up front. Flacco had all day, every play. That's a good one. Two, Woodhead is solid, but I think that Ridley might be more than just solid, giving more carries. I don't disagree with that. Why did Ridley's time decrease and Woodhead's time increase? That's another one we haven't hit on today. Number three, I have to mention the refs. I don't want to, because the Pats had a chance to win the game and didn't do it because of a bad defense and a slowed down offense at the end. So I will quote 71,000 people that screamed so loudly that all of Maryland must have heard it on the job that the refs did last Sunday, and that's bull bleep. I want to end with something good, so here it goes. The O-line looked good most of the day. Welker can still catch a ball. Lloyd and Brady looked like they got going, and lastly, Bernard Pollard didn't manage to hurt a single Patriot. Axel, nice email. Good job out of you. Or actually, nice Facebook post, I should say. John on Facebook. John, between the Pats, Ravens, and Green Bay Packers Seahawks game, did you notice the epic blown calls worked out in favor of the home team? Can you imagine if it had worked out the other way around? They would have had to escort the refs out by armed guard. That's probably true. And there's definitely something to the home field advantage influencing people who are not used to performing like that in front of 70,000 fans. Let's just face it. That's just the way it is. That's human nature. And that's why, again, you know, the NFL hired these guys. I don't necessarily blame the guys. I blame the NFL for getting in the position to have to hire them in the first place. Michael says, John, people are talking about the letdown by the offense at the end of the game. Sure, that was a problem, but I have to ask, why could the offense not put up more throughout the second quarter, except for a fast drive at the end of the quarter? Good point, Michael, although I would tell you that I think it's because Baltimore did a better job of controlling tempo in the second quarter, and they took the ball out of Brady and company hand. They just took it out of the Patriots' hands. I remember thinking that during the game while it was on. I'm like, God, they're not getting the ball in the second quarter. It's because Baltimore was controlling. Patriots ruled the clock in the first quarter. Baltimore took it back in the second quarter. You know, Patriots stubbed their toe on one drive, gave Baltimore the chance to run the clock, and they did. And the Patriots defense couldn't come up with a stop when they needed to. Michael also says the offense as a whole needs to start pushing to the end zone and not just getting field goals. Well, that's also obvious. Chris posts on Facebook, in 2012, can't we have a top-down camera to give unquestionable evidence? Hell, let's shoot lasers out of the tops of the goalposts if we have to. I would agree with you, Chris. I think that has to be experimented with now. I think it has to be experimented with now. Somebody should come up with that. Somebody should come up with that. Roberto, my nitpicks. One, the missed opportunities on defense to make big plays, such as the two McCourty picks. That's a good point. We dropped a couple of interceptions in the game, no question. And also the lack of ability to put away the game in the fourth quarter on both sides, offense and defense, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Let's see what else we have here. Jeremy. John, I don't do the Twitter, but I did read your column, and I appreciate your viewpoint. However, I strongly disagree. The blame, in my honest opinion, lies on the shoulders of the striking officials. What they're asking the league for is preposterous. The officials want fully funded pension plans they don't have to pay into, as well as a very generous increase in pay, not based on performance, while remaining part-time employees. In the private sector, such demands would be laughable. Well, Jeremy, as I said earlier, you have to understand the NFL is not the private sector, as you put it. It's a different world. So to equate it to the private sector to me is kind of ludicrous, because it's not equal to anything that you or I do. It's just not. Now, you could still disagree with what the striking officials are looking for. That's fine. I happen to think that, you know, hey, I think these guys are due something, because they're the only professional sport that isn't full-time. They're not full-time. I don't care what you say. I don't care what you think their pay rate is. They're not full-time. They don't do football 365 days a year. Maybe the NFL should think about that. And if the refs, I've heard from several, in fact, because I happen to know a few NFL officials, they don't want to go full-time. They like how they have it, which is great. But I'm going to tell you that I think the NFL should go ahead and make them full-time anyway. And if you don't like the job, tough. That's what you got. You either come to work or you don't. Maybe that's the way that you nip this thing in the bud. Brian, my nitpicks this week are with Patriots Nation. A disgusting lack of class by fans. Last year we held the improbable AFC Championship win as MHK's game. Where is that reverence for the significance of what this week's game meant to Torrey Smith? Are football games only bigger than the game if they result in a Patriot win? This doesn't seem an appropriate time to be bitter toward the Ravens in their victory. Blaming play calling for Brady's dud of a throw to Lloyd near the game's end. That clearly was a check from a run into a throw by Brady when he saw the space Lloyd had. Brady's call, Brady's missed throw. Responsibility lies with our golden boy on that one. I also have a nitpick on Rossi Dowling and Shane Vereen. The Patriots need these guys to get on the field and live up to the investments the team made in them. I'm tired of Woodhead and Arrington being forced into situations bigger than their skill sets. I like that, Brian. That's actually good. I like that. That's pretty good. Let's see what else I got here. I got some other ones here. Oh, goodness. I'm not even sure where to start. Let's start with Paul. Paul says, John, slightly early nitpick Tuesday, but here we go. The offense was inconsistent. Lloyd and Welker impressed, but when they had chances to kill the game off, especially in the fourth quarter, they didn't take them. Good points. Settling for a field goal from first and goal just wasn't good enough. The defense, I give a little more of a pass to. They started well. 2-3 and outs, and the pick, which is almost a pick six, given where Gregory finished. They also made a couple of key stops in the second half, particularly the fourth down play. They did give up 31 points, but a lot of that is on my main complaint, the officials. Now, I'm not going to put anything on the officials, Paul. I'll stop there. I'm not putting anything on those officials. The Patriots had things in hand. They had a chance to put their foot on the jugular of the Ravens and didn't do it, and I certainly am not going to give the defense a pass. Even Vince Wilfork said as much. They left the offense out to dry, hanging out to dry in that one on Sunday night. So we may have to agree to disagree on that one. Lots of comments as well on the officiating and the officials, not only in the Patriots-Ravens game, but also in the NFL overall. Let me snag a couple of more emails here. And I wanted to share, oops, Kevin, can you come reboot this thing for me real quickly? But before we do that, and before we sign off here, as we promised, let's hit the let's hit the song from our friends at KFan. Again, this is the parody on the Carly Rae Jepsen song "Call Me Maybe" that KFan in Minneapolis put together. You got to listen to this.
I threw my wish in a well. Got a call from Roger Goodell. Wanna ref the NFL? I said I'm on my way. I trade my soul for a wish. Personally thank the commish. Am I prepared for this? Who cares? I'm on my way. Coaches stare was holding. Ripped jersey skin was showing. Missed call, no whistle blowing. Which way is the ball going? Save me. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. It's hard to call right. Every play. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. And all the other boys, they try to blame me. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. I took my time with the call. I had to break up a brawl. Coach gave me no slack at all. I think I missed that play. They beg and grumble and steal. How many players allowed on the field? Is this scratch fake or real? Hey, focus on the play. Coach's stare was holding. Ripped jersey skin was showing. Missed the call, no whistle blowing. Which way is the ball going? Save me. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. It's hard to call right. Every play. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. Hey, I just met you. That play was crazy. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. And all the other boys, they try to blame me. What's his number? I'll call it maybe. The jumble screen shows the replay. I missed it so bad. I missed it so bad. I missed it so, so bad. The whole stadium's in dismay. I missed it so bad. I missed it so bad. I missed it so, so bad.
All right, so there you go. There's a good sampling of it. And if you want to hear the whole song, I've got it posted on my Facebook page, John.Rook. So if you're not a friend, go ahead, come on in. I won't bite. And then you can see the song there, and I'm sure it's all over the Internet anyway. Wanted to end up with a couple of emails. I want to share this one from our friend John in South Carolina, who says, "Dear Mr. Rook, you can take your sympathy for these replacement refs and stuff it where the sun don't shine." They don't have to be there. They didn't have to take the job. If I perform my job that bad, I would be fired, so do not stand up there and defend them. Well, I'm gonna, John in South Carolina, I am gonna I'm gonna represent them here. Because number one, you'd take the job if it were offered to you. And don't tell me, don't you dare tell me you wouldn't. Okay? You would, because you're a fan of the game. And if you were qualified to be a replacement ref and they asked you to do it, you would do it. Because it's a chance of a lifetime. And besides, you know what? If you perform your job that bad, you would be fired. Okay, that's great. I've already suggested that the NFL operates on a different sphere and a different plane than anybody else. It's not the real world. So stop comparing it to the real world. Now, where I will agree with you is the NFL can do better. They should do better. And they should be looked at as pathetic for putting the fans in this position. So I'll agree with you there on that one. John says, the things I'd like to talk about are refs, secondary, refs, non-calls, refs, blown calls, refs, the O-line. But so does everyone else, so I thought I'd complain about something else. Chris Collinsworth, good Lord, I hate this guy. He's so blatantly anti-New England, he has no business calling a Pats game. Much like they pushed the referee who was a Saints fan out of that game, I'd be thrilled to never hear that smug voice call a Pats game again. John, I understand that you probably don't like what comes out of his mouth, but frankly, I think he does an outstanding job as an analyst football. It may seem that he doesn't like the Patriots, but I think he does a pretty good job. I really do. Allen Thunderbase's ESPN's Darren Rovell put together a piece this morning after speaking with several sportsbook directors about the impact of the blown call by the replacement referees at the end of the game. Final estimate is about $150 to $250 million shifted worldwide as the Packers, who were 3.5-point favorites, went from winning and covering to losing when Golden Tate caught the game-changing Hail Mary last night. By the way, in case you hadn't heard, the NFL did rule on the call last night. And kind of paraphrasing here, the NFL said, while the ball is in the air, Tate can be seen shoving Green Bay cornerback Sam Shields to the ground. This should have been a penalty for offensive pass interference, which would have ended the game. It was not called and is not reviewable in instant replay. When the players hit the ground of the end zone, the officials determined that Tate and Jennings had the possession of the ball. Under the rule for simultaneous catch, the ball belongs to Tate, the offensive player, and the result of the play was a touchdown. The aspects of the play that were reviewable included if the ball hit the ground and who had possession of the ball. In the end zone, a ruling of simultaneous catch is reviewable. That isn't the case in the field of play, only in the end zone. And then the referee, Wayne Elliott, determined that no indisputable visual evidence existed to overturn the call on the field. So as a result, the on-field ruling of the touchdown stood. The NFL officiating department reviewed the video today and supports the decision not to overturn the on-field ruling following the instant replay review. The result of the game is final. Just thought you might want to know that. All right, good stuff today. Good stuff today, folks. I got to as much of it as I possibly could. I appreciate the cards and letters and the calls and everybody coming. It was outstanding stuff, and we will begin to turn the page, certainly on Pats Ravens tomorrow, because it's another road game, and it's a divisional opponent this week in the Buffalo Bills, and the Patriots simply must get back on track. So we'll begin to turn the page toward the Bills and tomorrow's playbook. I want you to be here for that same Pats time, same Pats channel. Todd DeVries, Bill Enright, they're coming up next on Fantasy Football Champs right here on Patriots.com Radio. Remember you were talking and I watched that sweatering down your face. So I reached over and I caught it. I'd be watching like my
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2